Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Wrestle Horror. Greetings, viewers and listeners. Meat Hook Jim here, along with my co-host Donnie Hoover and John Orlando. This is the Wrestle Horror Podcast. Donnie, how's it going?
Oh, doing good, man. Doing good. Trying to stay out of this heat.
It's been a hot one. John, what's your take on that?
You know, it has been a hot one, and I spent most of my day today cleaning up files for my podcast. So today was a good day to do that, stay out of the heat.
Absolutely. And our guest on this episode, episode 51, we've already passed the 50 mark. We've got Chris Parsons, also known to the wrestling world as Magnum CK. Chris, how are you doing?
I'm doing well, and, you know, it strikes me there's never been a better time to be able to avoid the heat than right now, right? Because nobody can go anywhere.
Right. Yeah. Makes it pretty easy.
Because you got me thinking, because I was like, yeah, I guess it is hot outside. And I'm like, you know what? I don't think I've been outside today.
Right. Yeah, it's easier to stay indoors when there's nothing to do.
I went outside a couple times today, and I regretted it quickly.
So, yeah, I'm doing great, though. Thanks for having me on, guys. It's one of those weird things where I feel like since March, I've done a lot of these types of things, and everyone's like, well, what's going on? And it's like, what's going on with you? Like, doing a lot of like mowing and hanging shelves and stuff. It's pretty cool.
That's about right.
Doing the domestic type stuff, right?
They wanted this big elaborate answer or something pretty cool, and you're like, I helped the wife do laundry.
I think I saw a blimp last week, but like, I don't know. It could have been a kite or something. I'm not sure. I don't know.
Hey, I've told my mom, I'm like, look, I know we usually talk two or three times a week. Let's just put it down to one, because these two or three times, so what'd you do, Mom? Nothing. Mm-hmm. What'd you do? Worked on some podcasts, that's it. And then it's like 10 minutes of awkward silence. So I'm like, you know what? Let's just make it one phone call for a while.
It's like the whole call's the last 5 minutes of the call where you're just like, well, and they're like, well.
You know, this weather is crazy along with the COVID situation. So, yeah, you know, we're doing a whole lot of nothing, and we're trying to keep busy doing projects. John says he's working on his podcast. Donnie, I don't know what Donnie does.
I just run around with my head like a chicken with my head cut off, pretty much. Just do whatever the wife tells me to do.
Yeah, that's pretty much where I am right now. You know, do this, do that. But today was all about me. I rebuilt one of my other computers, put a new, brand new, really fast video card in, and I'm really pleased about it.
Well, I always thought, you know, I've always kept myself very, very busy, and I'm sure my therapist has a few things to say about why that happens. I don't know, but I've always been really, really busy. And I always thought, you know, if I had a lot of time, if I could just stay home for a few weeks, like I would do this and I would write that and I would film this thing. And I started with a head of steam, but for like 3 months, like, I think I beat like 5 video games.
Like, he's like, I'm gonna roll.
I haven't done anything.
All right. What do you play, Xbox or PlayStation?
You know, I don't have an Xbox. I did have an Xbox and then an Xbox 360, but I have a PS4 and a Switch, okay. And I kind of go back and forth between the two. And the PS4 is much more time-consuming than the Switch. I feel like Nintendo games you can pick up and play for 10 minutes, but PS4 is like 10 hours at a stretch.
You know, I've got a PS4 with the whole virtual reality gear,
yeah,
and everything, and I get lost in there sometimes, you know.
Yeah, my kids, you know, we got that for my kids, and I always thought it was kind of BS until I tried it, and I was like, you know, it's actually pretty interesting. But what I can't get past, you know, I have obsessive compulsive disorder, so like I also have reading glasses, right? So, like, right. If there's anything on my glasses, like, I have to stop what I'm doing and get it off. And then if there's a smudge after I'm wiping it off, then I have to fix that. It just drives me crazy because I just focus on that. Yeah. And that stupid VR headset, they get their faces, like, pressed up against it. And there's all this, like, oil all over it. And I'm always like, oh, my God, I can't play with it. I got to wipe it all out. It's killing the illusion. Right. Dry out your T-zone, kids. Come on.
Well, do you try any horror games on that virtual reality?
Okay, I have wasted probably $80 or $90 on scary games that, like, both of my girls were like, no, no, no. Like, I want to play this. Like, there's one, like, they do the Five Nights at Freddy's, and they're, you know, but there's some more realistic ones.
Right.
Like, I think there was a Resident Evil one, and then some other game where you just, like, it was like a $10 game where you just go through some, like, haunted mansion type of thing. And every time it's like a 20-minute discussion where it's like, listen, I'll buy whatever, I don't care. If I have money, I'll spend it on whatever you want. I don't really care. But I don't want to pay $40 for this, and then you play it for 8 minutes and then be like, I'm too scared, and then we never revisit it. It's happened every single time. It was just like a week ago. They wanted some scary game I'd never heard of, and then I end up playing – I don't even want to play it, but I end up playing it because I'm like, I just spent $40 on this. Like, I'll be damned if I'm not going – someone's beating this game. Like, I'm miserable. I hate it. I don't want to play it, but I'm going to beat this.
Getting my money's worth.
Right, exactly. It's just based on principle. But, yeah, so the scary ones, I mean, I don't ever really feel afraid. It's just that it's like when – you ever have that thing where someone tells you about a movie or a book and you're like, oh, okay, well, that sounds okay. And they're like, well, here, I got it right here. Go ahead and take it and borrow it. And it's like, you know, if I'd found this book or this movie on my own, I might watch it. But now that it's like you're making me do it, I kind of – like now I don't want to do it. Like I'm resistant. So it's like I'm going to enjoy it less because now it feels like homework. It's kind of like that.
All right. So let's steer the conversation a little bit towards wrestling here. Yeah. Magnum CK. I'm going to shoot this out here, and I'm assuming that this is kind of like an homage to Magnum TA.
Yeah. So it all started like most things in my life. It started as a joke. I had a name when I wrestled originally. I started wrestling when I was 18. So I wrestled from like 2004 until like 2009, 10. And then I took a break and just did a bunch of commentary and some other things for a while. And my name was Chris Kahn with a K. It's spelled like Madeline Kahn, the actor. She was always one of my favorites. And I always thought that my uncle used our last name when he wrestled, and for some reason, like, Chris Parsons didn't sound like a wrestler name to me, and I wanted something that had alliteration and like, you know, I don't know. And so I used that name, and then when I came back in, like, 2015 or whatever it was, I started using that name again, and I don't know, I felt weird about it. And I've always done this thing for the last several years where, especially in wrestling, where I would try to see what everyone was doing and then maybe try to do something else. Like, it's not like, oh, I'm going to be the greatest technician or I'm going to be the best wrestler. It's like, I'm at least going to be different if I can. So then I'll get some attention that way. And just little stuff. Like, I noticed that all the guys, myself included, for years for wrestling were shaving their chest, shaving their bodies. And I was like, the only guy not shaving, there's like two guys with hairy chests in wrestling, so like, I'm gonna do that. Okay. And then for a little while I had like a mustache as like a fun kind of goofy thing, and wearing all these bandanas and stuff, trying to do like an 80s type of thing. And I was at the pool with my kids. I was just kind of like, you know, at a public pool, so they're having fun, and I'm just like sitting there eating like candy bars and stuff, you know, like trying to not get stung by bees. And I took a picture or something, and I had the mustache and a hairy chest, and I was like, oh, yeah, you know, like Magnum CK over here, you know, like, because it rides with TA. And my buddy Mike was like, dude, is that are you using that name now? And I was like, no, I don't know. It's just kind of a joke. He's like, I love it. Like, that's actually really funny. So I started doing it. And then it was one of those things where I started making announcers call me that. And then I got booked at AIW. And then they were calling me that. And it's like, well, it's kind of stuck now. I guess kind of my name now. And it's funny because most people never really bring it up. I mean, especially because my character took such a diversion away from like an 80s. I feel like my character could live in the 80s wrestling world, but it's not an 80s gimmick. You know what I mean? It's not like I'm coming out to, you know, Motley Crue and having bandanas down your arm and jean jackets and stuff like that. I just wanted a gimmick that would feel like the mid 80s. But the only person to ever make fun of me for that name to my face was Jerry the King Lawler. Yeah. Because somebody was like, his buddy was like, oh my God, I just went to AIW. I saw this guy, he's got this really funny entrance and like, he loves Andy Kaufman and you love him, Jer. And he, you know, he did this and that. And oh yeah, what's his name? Well, it's Magnum CK. And he's like, well, that's bullshit. Like, he was like, he's like,
how'd you find like, this story out? Did somebody tell you about this?
It was on his podcast. So he's like Magnum CK. And the guy, you know, hosting a podcast is like, yeah, man, no, he's great, he's great. And he's like, that's like Magnum CA, like, get your own name. And I was like, okay, first of all, Jerry the King Lawler, how many wrestling kings were there before you, Jer? Okay, like, who'd you steal that gimmick from, Lawler? And I find myself getting all defensive, and I'm like, yeah, he's kind of right.
Like, he's got a point. Nice.
It's just, I mean, when I first, when Donnie first told me we were going to talk to you, it's like Magnum CK. And, you know, obviously I went straight to Magnum TA because let me tell you,
yeah,
I'm 55 years old. I grew up in the 70s and 80s. I watched wrestling from the age of 12 until now. I mean, so Magnum TA, I get it. I think it's great, to be honest with you.
Well, I was born in the 80s, but I grew up in the 90s, but right. I watched all that stuff. You know, my uncle was a wrestler and he exposed me to 70s and 80s wrestling for the mostly. And, okay. That was always my favorite, you know, and I always like growing up, I loved Bret Hart and Shawn Michaels and all that stuff I was supposed to like, but I watched old tapes and I loved Ric Flair, Harley Race. I didn't have a satellite dish until I was like a teenager, you know? So I only got WTBS through the old school, like antenna. So I was like a WCW kid. So I got all the old PWI back issues from my uncle and I would read about, so I knew who Magnum TA was and all that stuff. So I don't look at the name as like, oh, you ripped off Magnum TA. It's not like, remember when the Giant came to WCW and they tried to say that he was Andre's son for like a minute? Yes. I never tried to like rip off Magnum TA. It was more like it was an homage to that era because technically Magnum TA is a ripoff of Magnum PI. So it's like, exactly. I'm like a ripoff of a ripoff. But it was more like just an homage to that style of naming and like it stuck out and it just kind of stuck. And I've never met Terry Allen, but I would hope that he wouldn't be mad at me. I would assume that he just doesn't know who I am.
Well, I mean, I'm sure he's probably heard of you by now. I mean, come
on. But again, it's all in the intent, right? It wasn't like, right. I'm going to make a name for myself on the back of Terry Allen. It was just like, yeah, it's kind of funny. Let's do it.
Right. So WCW fan, I get it. I grew up in Florida, so it was Florida Championship Wrestling, Georgia Championship Wrestling, and then WCW.
Well, my uncle grew up right outside of Pittsburgh, and they got studio wrestling, and they, for some reason, got the Georgia Championship Wrestling. So I saw Georgia Championship Wrestling in Florida growing up, you know, all the time.
So okay. When you say the studio wrestling, Chris, are you talking about Bruno Sammartino, WPXI 11?
That studio Bruno, wrestling? Bruno and the Batman and
DiNucci and those guys.
Yeah, Dominic. Well, Dominic DiNucci, my God, I mean, my uncle was still booking Dominic DiNucci in like 2008, I think. So, those guys, like, in that area are, like, legends to this day, you know? I mean, I still remember, like, you know, I was here in Ohio. You have that, like, flashbulb memory? Like, they talk about that, like, people, like, when JFK was shot or, like, 9/11, or like when you get a call that like a close family member died, like you remember exactly where you were and like what day it was and everything. It's a flashbulb memory. Almost all of my flashbulb memories are like when famous wrestlers have died. Mm-hmm. And I still remember where I was and like pulling over when I heard the news that Bruno died. And I was like, it was like my dad died. I was like, oh my God. Like, I thought we had more time. Like, I was like, I never got to like go meet Bruno. What was I doing all these years? You know?
That was actually my first autograph as a fan.
Man, I'm jealous. I'm really jealous.
Seriously. You know,
I've been very fortunate. Like, a friend of mine sent a hat that says The Brain. And it's autographed by Bobby the Brain Heenan with a little certificate of authenticity. He was like giving stuff away from his personal collection and he autographed it or whatever. So I have a few of those like posthumous autographs. It's not the same as getting it. I messed up because again, I've been around wrestling my entire life and I didn't start getting into like autographs of some of these guys until like 3 or 4 years ago. So, I mean, I could tell stories about drinking beer with Ricky Steamboat and like, 5 or 6 different locker rooms, but I never got him to sign anything, which was like really stupid.
Well, yeah, but at that moment, you know, is it just like, cause I know you and I talked, you know, a few months ago with my podcast, it was ordinary for you. It wasn't, you know, you said you would just, Ivan Koloff would be hanging out in this gym with you. And it was just it's Ivan Koloff. It's not like, it's not a big deal because you were exposed to it a lot.
Well, I was getting, you know, I got smartened up at my very first show when I was like 4 or 5. Oh, well, I see. It was 1991. So I guess I was 5. It was Wahoo McDaniel versus Ivan Koloff. And, you know, they had good guy and bad guy locker rooms. And I remember going to the good guy locker room and meeting all the good guys and then the good guy midget wrestler and like, yeah, and running around. And then my uncle's like, let's go to the other locker room. And I remember like wanting to shit myself. I was like, oh my God, like we're going to go meet the bad guys. Like I can't, like they're going to kill me. And I went in and everybody was just normal. And I was like, oh, okay. Except Lord Zoltan. So I'm like 5 years old and I'm like, you know, I know who Ivan Koloff is. I'm like, oh my God, like Ivan Koloff. I'm like shaking his hand, like all nervous. And then my uncle's like, see, like they're nice guys. Don't tell anybody. Don't tell your friends, but like, they're nice guys. They're nice guys. And all of a sudden Lord Zoltan just like swings open one of the bathroom stalls and is like looking around, like stalking around for me and chases me out of the locker room. So like legit for like 10 years after that, until I was like, admittedly a teenager, I was scared of Lord Zoltan.
I started wrestling back in 97 and I think it was like either my first or second year I ended up having to wrestle him, and I'll admit I was like probably the most nervous I'd ever been.
Well, you know, oddly enough, I never got to actually wrestle him until 2017 or 2018. I think it might have been 2017. And it was a show for my uncle in my old hometown, actually. Oddly enough, it just worked out. And they had him working babyface. And they had me as a heel. And I was like, oh, well, like, because I was like, well, what the hell am I supposed to do with Zoltan? Like, all my stuff I knew about Zoltan was like, you wring his arm. And he's like, no. And you're like, yes. You know, and you get the, like, all that stuff. And he's a good guy. And then, like, you know, like right before we go to the curtain, he's like, hey, just, you know, take it easy on me, kid. I'm like, are you kidding? Like, yeah, I'm going to be the guy to hurt Zoltan. Right. So we go out there and I just start calling all of his old spots for myself. And then he realized what I was doing, like cracked up laughing about it. And then I did all the Zoltan shit while he was like, you know, Mr. Good, you know.
Nice.
You know, I got to say, Chris, I'm kind of jealous because you got smartened up so soon. I mean, obviously, because you were pretty much born into the business. I was a big fan from the age of 12 to 16. You could not convince me that wrestling was not real.
I had, like, it was a weird thing. I went through a phase when I was young, probably until I was like 10 or 12, where I was like, I really suspended my disbelief, right? So it was like, yeah, I knew that my uncle's shows were kind of like, you know, they'd have the show, and then you'd see every single wrestler after every fan left, like around the concession stand getting whatever boiled hot dogs were left, you know? So it's like, yeah, like they all have like Band-Aids on their head and stuff. And like the guys who were killing each other are now like drinking beer and eating hot dogs together. So, but I always was like, but you know, WWF, man, like, I don't know, it's you know, different. Like, yeah, like it seems on the level. And I was really in denial for a while. And I remember I had an older friend of mine, because I was talking about Shawn versus Brett at WrestleMania. And I was like, dude, no, like Brett's going to win because of this and that. Like, and I was all this stuff. And he's like, dude, it's fucking fake. Like, oh, sorry, I don't know if we can cuss him this. He's like, dude, it's fucking fake. And I was just like, oh, yeah. Oh, you're right. Yeah. Well, like, let's just enjoy it.
Well, you know, what really clued me into it and smartened me up was in the mid-80s, I was at a local show at the auditorium. It was Barry Windham versus Les Thornton. Barry Windham was the baby face.
Wow.
Thornton was the heel. And me and my best friend were out back waiting for autographs. Barry and Les both walked out together, and Barry looked at Les and said, let's go get a beer. It's like, mind blown.
That's weird for that era. I can say two things come to mind. When I first started wrestling, you know, I've always been a big fan of Rick Rude, and there's all those legendary stories of Rick Rude, like, taking his gimmick to the bar and, like, picking fights with guys and, like, having his girlfriend go over and, like, kind of hit on a guy and then going and punching the guy in the face for talking to his girl, you know? And then everyone was always like, oh yeah, he's staying in character. He's keeping kayfabe. It's like, no, he's just kind of a dick. Like, he's like, he probably just was really tough and just wanted to beat up some guys. So when I first started, you know, I was a bad guy for, you know, for years, and people would ask me, like, you know, fans or kids, you know, would come up and ask for autographs. I'm like, ah, get out of here, you know? And I never felt good about it. I always felt bad. So I kind of pretty early gave up on that, was kind of like, yeah, sure, man. You know, like just kind of be myself until showtime. And then another thing came to mind. I remember watching a kid's belief in wrestling drain out of his body one time at a show, because one thing that people don't know, especially in these indie shows, the foreign object from the tights, you know, it's usually just like a bunch of tape rolled up, or like somebody grabs something and just wraps tape around it, like a piece of plastic, anything, you know.
Mine was cigarette wrappers.
Yeah, there you go. So a quick note, the time I wrestled Zoltan, they wanted me to win dirty. So we said, let's do the old foreign object thing, you know, I'll keep pulling it out, whatever. And it was right before we went out. Cause I was in the locker room with a couple guys, and we might have had a few drinks. I don't know. I'm wrestling Zoltan. It's a night off, really. I wasn't driving anywhere, just wrestling. And we're getting ready to go out, and I'm like, oh, I'm like, Kenny, I didn't make a deal. I didn't make a gimmick. And he's like, just pretend you reached in and grabbed something. They won't know. And I was like, I was so nervous. Came time for the finish. I just put my hands in my tights, came up like this, hit him close, went back down like this. Everybody would have sworn I hit him with brass knucks, right? So at this one show in particular, it's like 2005 or six, this guy was wrestling. He's terrible. I'm not even going to say his name because nobody would know it anyway, but he was awful. And he was paying the promoter a lot of money, so he got to wrestle like Abyss and do main events and stuff, and he was awful. But they made him a brass knucks out of literally like a circular piece of plastic. Like, you know, like the thing at the top of a milk jug, it's like, it was like that, but bigger. I don't know what it was, but it was just like piece of plastic. So this idiot, this complete moron, hits his opponent. Bang. It might even have been, he might've hit JT Hogg or, you know, I don't, it was one of those guys. He hits him with it. Right. Then takes the foreign object and throws it into the crowd.
Whoops.
And I'm watching from the side, and I'm like, no! Like, what are you doing? And I look, and one, two, three, right? So-and-so, he's out. If it was, I don't know, JT Hogg, whoever it was, is out cold. This idiot's up celebrating, and I look over, and I see a little kid pick it up, and he's, like, squishing it and, like, hits his brother with it. And I was like, oh, it's bullshit. I was like, oh.
Yep. Crush their dreams.
Oh, so that sucks. Did your uncle train you for wrestling, or did you go somewhere else?
When I was growing up and as a teenager, I would always get in and he'd show me some stuff and mess around. And then when I first started, when I turned 18, there was a place in Parkersburg, West Virginia, my old hometown, called NWA Tri-State. And a bunch of my buddies, one of my friends who I worked with and ended up getting an apartment with, Vance Desmond, who incidentally has his own training school right now. Very good wrestler. I mean, very good trainer. But he wrestled there and was like, hey, just come on down. Like, we'll just get you in the ring and we'll start teaching you some stuff. So I get in, you know, and I'm rolling around and I'm kind of feeling, I felt very comfortable in the ring from the very beginning. And, you know, I'd spent some time in there, but you know, the first few training sessions, you know, I kind of flew under the radar. The promoter didn't know I was there because I kind of just fit in, you know. And after a couple of sessions, the promoter comes in and he's like, hey, you know, who the hell are you? And I roll out and I'm like, hi, sir, you know my uncle and you know, you probably owe my uncle money. And hi, can I train here? You know, and he's like, well, yeah, sure, Vern, you can train here, but it'll be $50 for a tryout, and then it's $2,000 or whatever it is, and you can pay me in installments. And I'm like 18, and I think I was crashing with some buddies. I didn't have a place to live. And I was like, well, that's the end of wrestling, I guess. And then I had an idea because my family had this old my grandma had this old, like, church building, all right? And it was like this old Baptist church that was closed down, but it was built in like 1889, and it had this like stone foundation out in the middle of nowhere outside of Parkersburg. And at that time, they were only training once a month because whenever they did their shows at the city park. And I was like, hey, sir, I have an idea. If you, the rest of the month, would like to train people and make money off of them, you can use my grandmother's building for free. And meanwhile, I hadn't even asked. I just offered it, right? And you can use this building for free and charge everybody all you want if you'll just let me train. And he was like, yes, absolutely. So we'd set it up there and tear it down every month. And I got hundreds and hundreds of hours of free training and matches just out in the middle of nowhere. And then that's when I started, you know, you start the normal way, you know, you do some battle royals. And then we had about 4 or 5 months after that training, we had a show in Glenville, West Virginia. It was a free show, like Glenville University paid for the show. So it was like free admission for students. And it was like 2,000 fans, right? And I'm thinking, I'm just in the battle royal. Dusty Rhodes is on the card, Jeff Jarrett, Abyss, a few other people, but those were the three. I mean, you know, Dusty and Jeff Jarrett, my God. And all of a sudden they came up and they're like, you're on third, you're tagging with so-and-so and so-and-so against so-and-so. And I'm like, oh my God, I have a match. And I look over, the first match starts and I look over and I see Dusty's peeking through the curtain, watching every second of it. And I'm just like, I have to wrestle my first match in front of Dusty Rhodes. And like, I didn't even know I was wrestling tonight. So I just got thrown right into it.
Well, you mentioned a name that I haven't thought about in forever, Vance Desmond.
Yeah.
Jeff used to use him all the time, you know, for quite a number of years up in OCW. He was always very, very talented. Very good dude, too.
He's an excellent hand. And more than that, he's a nice guy. I mean, literally on more than one occasion between the ages of like 17 and a half and 20, I had no place to live. And I always crashed with Vance, you know, or like there was a time where we couldn't find jobs. I was 18 and, you know, he had just lost his job. And, you know, we just took care of each other. Like if he could bum $40 off of a relative, he'd be like, all right, we're going to McDonald's. We're going to eat like kings, you know? So, like, I mean, he was the closest thing to, like, a brother I had in those years, you know? So he's just a genuinely awesome, nice guy, like, to this day. And he's very successful now with businesses and things like that. And it always reminds me of, like, I feel like success and making money doesn't change who you are. It just amplifies who you are. And he was, even when he didn't have two nickels to rub together, I mean, he was a great guy. And if I called him today and said, buddy, I'm screwed. I need $500. I mean, he'd be like, what's your Zelle? You know, he's that type of guy.
Yeah. Yeah. I have fond memories of working with Vance. He was always a class act. Hands down.
Yeah. Class act, a good, you know, you hear the ring general thing, but he, I mean, he can call it out there and he can guide everybody. And I definitely attribute my knowledge of the fundamentals. I mean, that was one thing, like, especially as I started to leave wrestling, a couple of years ago, guys that I really respected, like Colt Cabana or, you know, and names I didn't expect, like Nick Gage and Eddie Kingston and a bunch of people coming up to me and be like, dude, you're a good worker. You know, your fundamentals are there. You have all that flash too, and you did it the right way. It's because of Vance. He taught me all those fundamentals and just drilled them into my brain, literally through drills. Right.
So what is the, Chris, what has the feedback been with your documentary that you released a few months ago, Magnum's Opus? Have you gotten a lot of feedback yet?
Yeah, I have actually, because it's been on Amazon Prime for a couple of months now. And, you know, I'll never be grateful for the coronavirus. But the one good thing that came out of it was I actually lost my editor in February because of some life things came up for him. And I was like, oh, my God, we're supposed to release this thing in April. And it's not even, we don't have anything done with the edit. It's all shot, but nothing's put together. And everything shut down. So I just got to sit down for like 300 hours or something and just teach myself how to edit and put it together. So it was a blessing for me in that sense. But I was very nervous to put it out because one, it's kind of long and it's very personal too. And it's hard to tell a story about yourself. And I just had to turn off my brain, that part of my brain, is to look at it objectively and just try to put together the best movie I could. But the feedback's been fantastic. I mean, I can't tell you how many messages I've gotten from people still. I mean, it's been out for a few months now and I still get messages at least once a week or so of someone being like, I just ran across this. Like, this is great. Thank you so much. Because the goal of it was, with our first movie, Marking Out, also on Amazon Prime, it was like, let's make a fun movie that anybody could watch. And you don't have to be a wrestling fan necessarily to like this. But with Magnum's Opus, it was like, you know, this is a wrestling person's movie, but I don't want it to just be about that. I want there to be a message, you know, that I want to convey in my life, for people to carry forward. And I think that wasn't lost on people. The message is in the movie.
Yeah, if I could step in on that note, actually with Magnum's Opus, I actually took two things away from that. To start out with, you had worked with us at New Ohio Wrestling. We had brought you in one show to tag with Jock, and then we brought you back for the first Arnold tournament, and you came in and worked with us that weekend. And it was after meeting you and talking to you and then just seeing your work, I couldn't really put my finger on it, but I always knew there was something different about your performances compared to everybody else's. And I never really put it together. I was just like, you know, I was like, there's something bit different about him. I'm not sure what it is, but, you know, I was like, we're going to go with it. It's cool. And then after watching Magnum's Opus is when I finally figured it out because of your theater background, which we can touch on here in a little bit. And like I said, I may be totally off on this, but this is just my opinion of what I've gotten, is most wrestlers, including myself when I wrestled, go out there and be wrestlers. And they do their wrestling, they do their stick, their gimmicks, all that. What you did was different, was you went out and did theater with and added wrestling to it. you know, the wrestlers went out and wrestled. You came out as Magnum CK and you did your character and your performance. And it's, and you could tell it stood out, like all the things you did, your mannerisms, you could tell that you really were Magnum CK as compared to just some guy getting in the ring with a big robe and wrestling, you know. And and I didn't really pick up on it until I watched Magnum's Opus and you had mentioned it, and then you had talked about it with your theater passion and all that and how you brought that into your character, and I was like, that's what it was. I was like, I couldn't figure it out. But so yeah, that was really unique seeing that.
Well, I appreciate it. Well, you know, and gosh, I think I started doing theater about 18 years ago. And since I've done, like, I think this weekend will be my 35th lead role in a play or musical. So, like, I've definitely put the time in. But that's part of it. When I came back to wrestling in 2015 or 16, that first match back, it hit me because I was very nervous coming back. I'd been driving back and forth to Philadelphia to train, you know, and just really trying to put my time in, but I was still very nervous. And then I got the ring and I looked around, and since the last time I'd wrestled, I'd done a ton more theater. And I was like, oh my God, this is just theater. And then like my nervousness just all went away and I started working, you know. And so that was a big revelation. But one thing I learned, I was lucky enough to do some work and some training at Second City when I lived in Chicago, improv, which is the most terrifying thing aside from stand-up that I've ever tried. I mean, I was much more successful personally at improv than stand-up, but they're both equally terrifying. But I had the first instructor I had there told me something very important, and which was, you know, the Harlem Globetrotters had to learn how to play basketball first, right? And I think that's what served me well in wrestling, because I learned how to wrestle first and then learned how to be a performer. And I think some people learn how to wrestle and never learn how to be a performer, and some people never really learn how to wrestle and just go out and perform. And it's like a guy that comes to mind that this reminds me of, I don't know if you guys are, how familiar you are with RJ City.
Yes, I'm familiar with, okay. Yes.
He's one of the flashiest, most flamboyant, mm-hmm. over-the-top performers, but that guy's fundamentals are sharp. I mean, he is a good wrestler, and a lot of people don't realize that. And I've known him for a long time, and I didn't even fully realize it until we worked together. I was like, oh, man, this guy, this is a night off. This guy is great because he knows how to wrestle, just like the Globetrotters know how to do free throws and how to dribble and how to do all the basics, and then they can entertain everybody. So I think that's the key to – I also have probably maybe to some wrestlers a controversial look at wrestling. To me, it's acting, and I think that that's – people take offense to that, and like the fake word, people take offense to that, and I get it. I mean, you know, if someone came up to me and was like, what you do is fake, that kind of pisses me off, because it's like, well, I've got x-rays to show you how fake this is.
Right.
My nose hooks to the left a little bit if you want to know how fake it is, you know. Yeah, you could just listen to my knees and elbows and ankles crack and pop, and we'll see how fake it is. But yeah. You know, I just look at it as, and when I do character and promo seminars, I'm always like, I'm sorry to break the news to you, but you're an actor, you know, and I think one thing that I dislike about a lot of current wrestling is because it's like everyone is trying to play wrestler. Mm-hmm. And I'm not trying to speak badly on anybody, because the athleticism and the entertainment is still amazing and it's there. But what's missing for me is, they're all trying to play the character of a wrestler. But back when I loved it, and the guys that I love in the 80s and 90s, was they were actors playing the role of professional athletes. And that's a weird difference, but it's like that kept them grounded in, we can be ridiculous, but like, let's at least try to make this seem like it might be real. And now it's just like, hey, brother, help me up to the top rope so I can jump on you. And it's like, that kind of took me out of it. Like, I watch it with my wife sometimes, and she's not a wrestling person, you know, really. She never watched it before she met me. And she's like, you know, I stop watching and pick up my phone as soon as I see them help each other. And I'm like, right. Because that's the magic, right? Like, what's magic about wrestling is the guy's giving me a body slam, but what you didn't notice was that I kind of cartwheeled up him and did a little jump. You know, it's like I'm kind of pushing off of him to help him. But if, you know, if that's telegraphed, and it's like, oh, I see how the magic trick's done. I don't really care.
Yeah.
Right. Yep.
Yep. Exactly.
Yep. Exactly. And the second thing that I got out of Magnum's Opus, and I want to give you props for this, because I'm like you. I kind of like silly comedy, but I'm the kind of person that if I see something funny and it drags on and continues, I got to laugh louder and louder and harder and harder. And the part where you got your arms spread out in AIW and you're knocking people's hats off and making a move out of the way, it was like the more that played on in the documentary, the more belly laughing I started doing. Well, and I thought that was like the greatest thing ever.
So I appreciate that. And I think I talk about how that was kind of just a goof at first. You know, the week before I debuted at AIW, I did that just to try to make my life or my wife laugh, because she's sitting there bored at a wrestling show for several hours, you know.
Yep.
And then it really worked. But I was very nervous trying that, you know, at a place like AIW or at like Destiny or like any bigger place that was streaming and everything, because I was like, listen, this entrance is like 2 minutes, like like WrestleMania Undertaker level of time here. So if it doesn't work, it really is not going to work. But that entrance doesn't work if it's 30 seconds long. It's like, right, it almost has to be like, oh my God, how long is this guy going to take to get to the ring? And that's funny, right?
Yep. And for the record, I actually rewound it and watched that part again. I got to laughing at it so hard.
The International Wrestling Cartel, IWC, mm-hmm, in Pittsburgh, I was booked there right after I started doing that, my character, Magnum CK, the character, and figuring it all out. And I was in the first match, and right before doors opened, someone broke the ring practicing a spot. They broke the ring, so they had to run off to like the training center, get a new turnbuckle or whatever it was, come back. So we're late, the show's like 45 minutes late, and we had like 6 to 8 minutes anyway, and the promoter comes up to me and he's like, Chris, I'm so sorry, but you have two. And I was like, two what? Like, what does that mean? Two fans? Okay. No, he's like, 2 minutes. And I was like, okay, all right, 2 minutes, we can do that. He's like, I mean, curtain to curtain, 2 minutes. And I'm like, oh. And we're going on in five? Great. Okay. So I go over to my, you know, I go over to my opponent, I'm talking to him, I tell him my idea, I take it back to the promoter, I'm like, listen. Because the promoter said, just squeeze all your shit in 2 minutes and just see what happens. And I was like, ah, that's a disaster for me. I mean, right. I think a lot of guys could do that, but I don't really have a lot of moves, and I don't know what to do.
Like, I don't have a lot of shit.
if I had 2 minutes just to wrestle and I had to razzle-dazzle put it in, there'd be a 30-second headlock, because I'm like, I don't have anything. I did my three things. I have less moves than Kevin Nash and a lot less money. So I don't know what to do. And so I was like, how about I do my big long entrance, which they hadn't seen yet. And I was like, we do a flash knockout, because the guy I was wrestling was a former MMA guy. And I was thinking UFC, they do it all the time. Bell rings, guy gets kneed in the face, boom, it's over. What happened? And he's like, you really want to bury yourself like that? I'm like, listen, if we do this right, like, I'll be the most over one in the building, you know. Yeah. Like, I'm not worried, and so will he. I'm like, I'm not, like, are you kidding? I'm not worried about that. And he's like, I don't know, man, it sounds like it's gonna fall flat. And I was like, just please trust me, because I'm gonna do it anyway. And he's like, okay, fine, you know, I don't want to. So we did it, the 2 minutes, right, the whole entrance, that's one of the entrances that's in the movie. I come out, it's like a minute and 30 seconds. I get in the ring, I take off my thing, look around, ding, 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 run, duck the line, knee to the face, boom, 1, 2, 3. Oh my God, I fall out of the ring. I fall over the rail. We can't believe he lost. I'm like swinging at fans. I fall back over the rail. I'm back crawling through the back, 2 minutes in and out. And the promoter walks up to me right after. He's a great guy. He's just like, you know what? This doesn't happen very often, but you were right. That was great. I was like, yeah.
Yeah. So for people out there that doesn't know what we're talking about, go to Amazon, watch Magnum's Opus, watch Marking Out. Trust me, it's pretty funny. I really enjoyed it.
I have a quick theater question. All right, Chris. It's
My question is, what are some of your favorite plays or musicals?
Well, you know, I never was a musical guy for the longest time. I always said I'd never do one because I'd never sang a song before. I played guitar and things like that, but I didn't know if I could sing, and I never wanted to find out. You know, that's a social anxiety, right? Like, you don't want to stand up in front of a bunch of people and be like, "Oh, I'm the shit." It's like, great, bye everybody. So for years and years, I just did plays. And I always liked the classics. I like to do Shakespeare and things like that. And I did The Odd Couple, and I love that. You know, I love a lot of classic plays. But around 2011, the theater in my town was putting up the Broadway version of the Rocky Horror Show. And I always loved the movie, and I wasn't super familiar with the Broadway musical. It's pretty similar to the movie. I mean, it's just like, it's not like the shadow cast where they go in front of the movie theater screen. It's like, it's the show, like you're playing the characters, mm-hmm. and it's, mm-hmm. you know, a full length show. And I thought, well, you know, I'll audition, I'll try to sing, and maybe I'll get Rocky, you know, and that's a great role. And that's can be a hard one to sing, but I was, you know, I'm 6'4". And at the time, I think I was probably like 220, something like that, and really good shape. And I was like, I'm probably going to be the most muscular one there. So I audition, and I get Frankenfurter, and I'm like, what the hell does that mean? Like, what? Like, what? Like, I can't do that. I can't walk in 5-inch heels. I don't know if I can sing or not. I sang at the audition, and they let me in. But, like, other than that, I don't really know what in the hell I'm going to do. And so I immediately changed my diet. I dropped down, like, 25 pounds because I was like, I got to be really skinny. If I'm going to be – I love Tim Curry. I'm going to be as skinny as Tim Curry if I can. And I just – that's when I learned how far confidence can take you, because I just – told myself that I'd own it, and I worked my ass off on it and worked on the songs. And, you know, this plays into wrestling, what you were saying about theater. I wasn't confident in my singing ability. I've had a lot of training and a lot of experience since, and I feel fine about it now. But at the time, I'd never sung in front of a crowd before. So I worked on the music, but I went full character. I was like, no one's even going to know or remember what I sang if it's bad, because I'm just going to 1000% character this thing. And I just threw myself into it. And so Rocky Horror probably became my favorite show of all time for that reason. And it's actually the show where my wife, you know, we weren't married at the time, we met on this show. She played Janet, and we became best friends and got married a few years later. So Rocky Horror is up there. And you know, a few years before that, sorry, my answers, I have ADHD, so I just go, man.
all good.
A few years before that, I've always been a big Mel Brooks fan, and I saw Young Frankenstein, the musical, and I was so sad because I was like, I want to be in this show, and I'll never do a musical because I don't think I can do it. I don't think I can sing and dance, and I don't know if I can do all that stuff. And a few years after that, after I started doing it, I got to do that musical, Young Frankenstein, and play the Gene Wilder role of Frederick, and I got to play it. So, like, wrestling is choreography. Like, as soon as I started doing choreography, I was like, this is just like wrestling. It's like running the ropes. You got to be coordinated. You know, you have to know how to post, brother. You got to turn. You know, it's all the same animal. And that's why I say this. I'm not trying to say I'm a master, but like, mastery of these different things are transferable. So if you put in 10,000 hours of acting, and you can transfer that to a wrestling character easily. You know what I mean? Like, they're different species or mm-hmm. different subspecies of the same animal. So it just all kind of came together.
I've got to ask you, Chris, now that Rocky Horror was brought up, and I know before we went on the air, I wanted to say something. First of all, finding out that you played Frankenfurter is not really shocking. But I you talk about shadow cast, and I actually did shadow cast for 11 years. Fortunately, I didn't have to sing because I can't sing to save my life. But I can lip sing with the best of them. And I usually played Eddie and Dr. Scott.
Yeah.
However, there were times when I was younger and a lot thinner that I did play Frank. What size shoe do you wear?
Well, we had the special order.
That's what I thought.
Because I think because they had me in some women's heels, and I think they were 13 or 14, because I think they're two sizes up, because I'm like an 11 or 12, depending on what it is. Yeah, so it was like a size 13. Actually, I remember because the costumer was like, honey, these are female shoes. There's not a woman who's comfortable in heels because we all buy shoe sizes that are about a size too small. So I'm getting you a size too small. I'm like, ah. So I had like these calluses and cuts all over me. But they did. They put me in 5-inch heels. I had to do all my rehearsals. They put me in 5-inch like wedges, and those are even harder to work in. So I really got used to it. But it's funny because I really had to learn and teach myself and figure out how to walk and dance and move quickly in those. And as a tall person, that's hard because I have a large gait, and the key to heels is taking small steps, legs right in front of each other, right? And I see women all the time walking down in my town here in heels, and especially like college girls, you know, probably for the first time running in heels. And I'm like, oh, honey, like, oh, I wish I could help you. Like, they're just like clamping around, and I'm like, oh, no.
I got it, Chris. I got to say, I feel your pain because I'm 6'4" also.
Yeah.
And when the times I had to play Frank in those heels, it's like, yeah, I had to rehearse to slow my gait, you know, to shorten my gait. It's hard for guys like us that are tall, and you know, we're not used to walking in short gaits. It's a long stride.
Well, it's just like anything else. The hardest thing to learn in wrestling school is running the ropes, in my opinion. Right. Mm-hmm. I picked up the rhythm pretty quickly, but just being in thousands of training classes, that's the thing that everyone struggles with. And it's just repetition. Repetition is the mother of learning, right? It's the same with all that stuff. I mean, it's everything's the same formula. It's I not to name drop, but I always try to give credit because I wrestled Norman Smiley a couple of times, oddly enough. Yeah, I don't know. It's weird. And super nice guy. And he always told me that when he first met Rey Mysterio, he was so impressed because Rey Mysterio would be in the locker room, like dropping all this like life knowledge and philosophy. And he was like, what the hell? Like, okay, this kid's like 20 years old. Like, but Rey told him, and you know, Norman Smiley told me, success is when preparation and opportunity meet. So I will never be unprepared for any of that stuff. So it's like, if I have, cause like the auditions for Rocky Horror were the weekend before my first wedding. Right. So get that. I met my wife now. I met 6 days before I was getting married to someone else.
Okay.
Right. So like we're in auditions together, and then the first couple rehearsals, and I'm like, oh no, like what am I doing? Like why? And, you know, so the weekend before auditions, again, I'd never sung anything. I'd never walked in heels. I had no idea what to do. While my fiance back then was having her bachelorette party, I canceled everything and just stayed home all weekend and just pounded the music and pounded trying to walk around the house, and I'm vacuuming in heels and falling down and rolling my ankles and icing them and taping them and like all this stuff. You just have to put that work in. I mean, you never see that. You only see the tip of the iceberg, which is the performance, but there's all that stuff down below, you know?
Absolutely. So, gentlemen, we want to steer a little bit towards horror now, because I mean, Rocky Horror isn't really horror, as you know. It's musical. But what about horror? Now, we were talking about horror with you before we went on air, and you mentioned you have several horror tattoos.
Oh, yeah. Well, so I grew up, I didn't watch a lot of, like, we had one TV, you know, it was kind of in that era where we still had one TV. And so I didn't have a lot of say in what was on. So it was a lot of, like, adult shows. I don't mean adult like adult. Right? It was like if they wanted to watch Candyman, like I'm 8 years old and we're watching Candyman, I guess. So I grew up kind of watching that stuff, and then with my friends. And the first novel I ever read or tried to read all the way through was a Stephen King novel, The Dark Tower. And so I've always had a penchant for that type of stuff. I've always liked horror, the horror genre. And so, yeah, I have like the big Dark Tower, like the big first chapter, Gunslinger and everything. I'm a big Stanley Kubrick fan. So The Shining is my favorite movie, even though that's like two worlds colliding because it's like Stephen King versus Stanley Kubrick. And like, to me, they're both geniuses, but they hated each other. And they, Evil Dead. I have an Evil Dead tattoo. Yeah. I have Friday the 13th. I have the 3D 13.
Okay.
Freddy Krueger glove. You know, actually, I don't know if you guys know this. There might not be that many left, but there's a new Friday the 13th box set coming out. Did you see that?
Oh no, I haven't.
I have not seen that yet.
Shout Factory or Scream Factory, their horror subsidiary. It's like not a sponsor, but it's like the whole original Friday the 13th series plus all these extras and all this stuff on 4K. They took the first four movies, took the film negatives, reprocessed them as 4K. It's this wild thing. It's like It's like $150 for this whole thing. So already pre-ordered.
Oh yeah, I say I'll have to look into that because that's my favorite. Friday the 13th.
Yeah.
And Shout Factory is pretty top notch because they put out a lot of older stuff. I have a buddy that's ordered a lot from there. I've ordered from it's called Kino Lorber, which is another one of those type of companies. They deal with a variety of different films as well. There's some companies out there putting out some really cool stuff.
There's never been a better time to be stuck at home, I suppose.
So, obviously you've shown us some of the horror icons that you really like. Let me ask you mentioned The Shining. What did you think of Dr. Sleep?
I liked it because I was very worried about it because I thought I knew that Stephen King hated Stanley Kubrick's interpretation because he changed a lot of things and purposely, you know, and made it his own project. And in my opinion, I love The Shining book, but I think Kubrick made it even better. I mean, I love it. I'm a big Kubrick fan anyway, but so I thought, well, you know, they're going to do Dr. Sleep, which is also a good book. And I was like, that's fine, but they're going to probably not include any of like, it's not going to be connected to the Kubrick film at all. It's going to be totally separate. And then when I saw the trailer and the first thing you hear is that like, dun, 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 dun. I was like, oh my God. And it was weird though. Like, I don't know, like spoilers or whatever, but they kind of put Jack in it kind of, and that was weird. But like, yeah. I did enjoy it. I really liked it.
Well, I've got to agree with you. It surprised me as well. I was on the fence like you were about it. And when I watched it, it's like, wow, okay. I can deal with this. This is good.
Ewan McGregor's never done anything wrong to anybody anyway, so he's great.
No, what you speaking of Ewan McGregor, what you can't see right now, because I've got my zombie green screen behind me, is the entire room I'm in, which is my bedroom, is nothing but Star Wars.
Oh, right.
I've got all the movie posters. I've got the Darth Vader helmet. I've got the lightsaber over here, everything, so... Yeah, Ewan McGregor did. I think he did great in the first three prequels. Not that everybody loved the prequels, but
he was the best part. He was probably the best part of it, I'd say.
No worries there.
So supposedly, I'll throw it out there, Chris and Jim and Donnie. Yeah. I don't know the title of it, but there's supposedly a Kubrick documentary done by his daughter.
Oh,
it's supposed to be really, really good. Because she just filmed it on the various different sets she was on.
Oh.
But it's pretty, like, she's pretty, like, wide open because there's some really, like, harsh stuff in there. Like, there's supposedly a scene where Kubrick's just unloading on Shelley Duvall.
Oh, yeah. Well, I that would be interesting to see because that's, like, a famous Hollywood story, right? Like that scene where Jack's chasing her up the stairs, like they did it like 170 takes or whatever, and he was like berating her, making her feel terrible, and got this great performance out of her. But yeah, I'd love to see some of that. I'll have to look that up. Have you ever seen any of the footage of Jack Nicholson on set getting ready for the Here's Johnny, the axe thing? Have you ever seen that?
No.
it's terrifying. He's like, there's like someone going through with like a like an 8mm camera or something, just kind of filming, and he's just in the corner talking to himself and like jumping up and down and like, it's
just like, oh my god. Oh wait, I think I have seen that. Yeah.
Yeah, because he's like, I don't know if he always was, but back then he was like a method guy, so like he was like in it.
Well, being that you got theater and horror and wrestling and all these backgrounds, have you ever done any, which is one of the things we specialize in as well, especially Jim, is you ever dabbled in haunted houses and worked for any haunted houses or anything?
You know, I actually did do one, and they had me doing like a Frankenfurter type of care. Like I was the host. I would start them out, right? Like they had a little office set up, and like they would come in, and it was like my office, and there was like weird stuff everywhere. And I would kind of tell them the rules and just kind of talk to them and like make them feel weird or whatever. But I will say I have huge respect for haunted house workers, because I think I did it. I way overcommitted. It was like, it was like a friend of mine. So I was like, yeah, I'll do all 3 weekends or something. Like, that'll be fun. And like after the first weekend, I was like exhausted and freezing and like hungry. And I was like, this sucks. But it's hard. It's hard work.
It is definitely. I've done it for a number of years. I even ran a group of actors for 6 years that traveled around to different haunted attractions, doing queue line work for them.
Oh, nice.
So it does wear on you, definitely. And I
well,
mean,
a lot more goes into it than people think. I mean, I was there helping them set up for, you know, several weeks before. And I mean, it's just, it's a labor of love, because some of those make money, but you know, not a lot of people doing it make a lot of money.
You know, we made enough money for me to give the actors a few bucks and a place to stay, and that was about it, you know.
Yeah, we got the – it's like – it's a lot like wrestling, like the hot dog and the handshake.
Right? I was just getting ready to say that.
not far off from that, definitely.
I actually one time when I was 19 got fired from a promotion that I had never worked for before and didn't plan on working for ever again. And not only was I fired in front of the locker room, I was not given my $5 payday. And I was also told that I was not welcome to the crock pot full of boiled hot dogs.
Broke your heart, didn't it?
Hey, real quick side note, by the way, that film is called Making of the Shining. It's it's a short 30-minute documentary that's done by Vivian, his daughter. So
I'll check that out. Yeah,
it's online, apparently. It's on a bunch of different places. I looked it up here just a few moments ago. So
I'll check it out. Kubrick fascinates me. I have a shelf full of books of Kubrick, and just his, the fact that – and again, the reason why he was such a good filmmaker, it's one, he's a genius, and two, he's kind of crazy. But he was a photographer first. Mm-hmm. So that's why his movies are so beautiful, because he just had that eye.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me ask you this, Chris. Where are you located right now?
I live in Athens, Ohio, unfortunately, okay. Because we are in a red county for COVID.
Yep, so are we.
Yeah. It's Franklin.
That's why I'm not leaving. I don't leave my house. I don't go anywhere.
I'm just north of Cincinnati, and you know where these guys live. So,
yeah.
The reason I ask is because, and we discussed this before we went online, paranormal investigations. I mean, Athens has got some great paranormal places, and you mentioned West Virginia. Have you ever had the opportunity, have you ever done any paranormal investigations?
Well, a couple things. I just, right before, it was in February or March, I can't remember, but it must have been February, because it was right before everything shut down. Mm-hmm. I was in a movie. We shot a movie at the West Virginia State Penitentiary.
Okay.
In Moundsville.
Yes.
And, you know, between setups, because, you know, it was freezing. It was like February, and it's not like there's heat in this, you know, 250-year-old prison or whatever it is. So between setups, they would send us all the actors down to the lobby, and there's food and coffee, and, you know, it wasn't a crock pot full of hot dogs, but I was welcome to all those. They did let me eat, you know.
And,
right. And, the guy who was like running the place that day, the guy who worked there was a tour guide, and he just had a million stories about how haunted that place was and like the stuff he's heard, and like he's heard gunshots, he's heard screams, and I'm like, I got goosebumps just thinking about it because we shot all this. It's where that show Castle Rock right. just shot there too. And yeah. it's legitimately terrifying. And I played a prisoner and they legit, the doors, the electric doors still work.
Yes,
they're
they
like
do.
Locking me in. And I'm like, yeah, they work now, but they're like 150 years old. Like, are they going to work when it's time to go home? Like, am I going to get out of here? But it was definitely, you could feel whatever it was in that place. And where I live here in Athens, there's the ridges,
yeah.
Which yeah. it was the asylum. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if you've heard of this. It got famous. I heard of it and was messing around with it before it got TikTok famous, but it's called Rando Knotting. Have you ever heard of this? Mm-hmm. Okay. It's an app called Rando Nautica. And what it does is, and we're getting deep here. I'm sorry. We're going way deep.
You're fine.
So there's this theory, and it's been scientifically proven, that our consciousness can somehow, in small ways, affect reality, right? So like when they do these electron tests, like they can have people concentrate and it'll change the way things move, you know, and it's crazy. So anyway, the thought is, if you have an intent and you're trying to manifest, you can affect a truly random number being generated from like these like supercomputers, right? What's it called? Where they go so fast, they go to like another dimension, these new computers, quantum computers. It's crazy, right? I mean, I spent like 4 days reading about it because I was like, what? I don't even understand what I'm hearing. So anyway, you get a group together or you can go by yourself. And you just think like, all right, I'm going to find something red. And you click it and it gives you random number coordinates in your area. And it just takes you to a random spot. Now, what this thing measures is a void of energy, you know, electrons, or a spike of electrons, right? It'll take you to whichever one's an anomaly, whichever one sticks out the most. And you can find some weird synchronicities and stuff. And if you do that around here, it takes you to some creepy, you start messing around in like a 250-year-old, insane asylum graveyard, and you're finding weird things. But there was a group of teenagers. They got, the story blew up. It was in Seattle. The thing took them to a dead body that was inside of a suitcase.
Yes, I saw that.
It's wild, right? So, yeah. So, the supernatural, again, I try never to sound too crazy. If I have a couple of drinks and I start explaining quantum physics to people, I'm like, you don't understand, man. Like, there's different dimensions. And if you just think hard enough, you can go there. You know, it's like, come on, man. Take it easy.
But when you're bored, if we go back into another lockdown and you're bored, you're going to start thinking about being in another plane of dimension. Yeah. Is that what you're saying, Chris?
Yeah, yeah. I'm peacing out. I'm getting out of here. Because I know that there's a dimension where we've got a vaccine and, like, there's, like, the Spice Girls are touring again, and it's just
so I got to say, Chris, I haven't been to the ridges yet, but I've been to the West Virginia State Penitentiary twice.
Oh, wow.
And I've picked up some really weird stuff, and I've been touched, and I've had electronic voice phenomena that can't be explained.
Yeah.
So I'm right there with you. And I know, John, we were talking about paranormal stuff before we came on the air. What was that you were talking about?
I just asked you, Jim, if you were following the adventures of Stormy Daniels, who is out doing paranormal investigations.
I have not yet, but I'm going to look into this. And my only question does she have EMF detectors in her nipples?
I don't know. She is doing it fully clothed, though. So if you're hoping for some topless investigating of paranormal activity, I don't think that's happening. So,
the EMF can go through clothing. It's okay. You know?
that's what the internet's for, right? Just search right. for that.
And I said, you know, what's she going to do? Boob them to death? Well, they're already dead.
Well, in that parallel universe Chris is going to, where the Spice Girls are touring, I'm sure Stormy is our president.
Right.
So, I mean,
Shania Twain's her vice president. It's crazy. Wow.
Oh man, this has been an awesome conversation, Chris. You've been, you know, you're right up there on the top of the list with our guests. This has been a lot of fun.
Yeah, I appreciate it, man.
Yeah, it's a pleasure to meet you finally. I've heard good things from you, but from Donnie and John both. So hopefully we'll get to meet sometime, and we'll talk Rocky Horror and paranormal and whatever you want to talk about. You
know? I have nothing but time, and I've read lots of really weird books since we've been locked down, so I am free to come on and blow everyone's mind anytime.
So I've read a lot of weird books, and I'm dying to tell people about it.
So, I gotta share this. It's freaking out, man.
So, how can people find out more about Magnum CK, Magnum's Opus, those kind of things? What kind of social media and whatnot can you give us for that?
Well, Magnum's Opus is on Amazon Prime. It's on IWTV, the Independent Wrestling TV. It's still on. I do have it on YouTube just because I knew not everyone had Amazon Prime. But, I mean, YouTube is just the worst. So, like, it's great. I use YouTube every day. I love watching YouTube. But as a, if you're a content creator, I've had 5 different people claim rights to my documentary
about on you. YouTube.
Because I kept it, I put it up there ad-free, for free, just to be like, hey, I just want people to see it. Right. And then you don't get a notification when someone claims rights on your deal. So 2 or 3 weeks ago by, and I'm like, let me just check. And it's like, oh, so-and-so says that they own your movie. They've been, there have been commercials on it. They've been collecting money. And I'm like, what? So I have to like challenge it. So watch it on Amazon Prime or IWTV. I mean, it's free on Amazon Prime. But really, I do try to keep active on Twitter. I try not to get too crazy on there, but it's at the Magnum CK, because there's like 5 other Magnum CKs, which I don't. And like one of them, I don't remember which one. I think it's like Magnum-CK or something. He's like problematic on Twitter. Like he is like, he is like alt-right, white nationalist, like George Soros stuff. And I'm like, please God, no one thinks this is me. Like I don't want to get fired and canceled because this guy's lost his mind. Like I'll read books about other dimensions and stuff, but like, okay.
That's where I draw the line.
So it's the one with the picture of me on it. So.
Well, it's been an absolute pleasure talking with you, Chris. Again, I would love to have you back on the show because this has just been an amazing conversation, and I'm sure there's a lot more that we could talk about in the future.
Yeah, actually, I do want to step in because I did forget to ask him something.
Please.
When we do have wrestlers and people like this on, we always try to pick their brain and get a piece of information out of them, a tip for other wrestlers and trainees and stuff to use. Your bread and butter is obviously promos. You do promo training classes and all that. Can you give us a couple tips or a tip or your biggest tip on promo work? Because for independent wrestling, we both kind of have to, you know, admit that it's not the best out there. So I mean, what could you do to help other indie guys out there?
Well, I could, you know, because my the seminars I do are sometimes like 2 hours long, but so I could talk about it for a long time, but just off the top of my head, just even buying a tripod and setting up the camera landscape style, because there's never been a better time to have to make video, because you know, your phone's a movie studio. I mean, people make entire projects off of iPhones and stuff. And I did some promos where I'd use some nicer cameras that we had, multi-camera shoots, just because I had it. But 90% of them were just on a phone. And then I got fancy and I started getting like a wireless mic lav I'd put under my shirt or like, you know, stuff like that just to get the audio a little better. But that's a simple one. Background. All these ones, if I see another seatbelt in a promo, I'm gonna come back to wrestling just so I can quit. Get out of your car, and have some depth in the background. Go find a cool part of town. You know, go find something cool behind you. Make it look like a picture. One Google search on just cinematography theory and just how to frame a shot will people won't realize it, but subconsciously they will enjoy that video more because it's framed in a pleasing way. And then as far as content goes, simple. Keep it simple. I never really sat down and like wrote out promos. I always kept a little note app in my phone if I had a line or an idea or a theme of a promo. But it was always like, try to do something a little different every time and stretch myself and be a little different, stand out. Don't say, cause tonight, don't say I'm here for one reason and one reason only, right? Like don't do any of the like normal platitudes and sayings. But I feel like the more you try to stretch yourself in these promos, the more of the character you'll find, because the harder you try, the worse you'll do. And I don't mean be lazy. What I mean is the more I tried to find characters, and this is with wrestling or acting, and pushed it, it never came. But when I got to that point of frustration and then I stopped, it's like your brain waves open up and the character finds you. John Lennon has a very cool thing that he always said, which was like, I'd be playing on the piano for 6, 7, 8 hours trying to figure out what the hell to write. And then I'd finally be like, I suck at music. I quit. I'm making a sandwich. And he'd get halfway through the mustard and be like, oh my God, I have an idea. And he'd run back to the piano and he would write a song, right? And it would be a hit. And he'd always say, you had to go through that toil and that frustration to open yourself up to whatever that creative, you know, that tap into that creativity is. But promos, keep it simple. Have a message and stay on message, I guess. I always had an interesting way to start, and then my point, and then an interesting line to end on, or something impactful to end on. The rest you can kind of maybe even figure out if you go to the improv or feel as you go. But if you have a good beginning, a point, why am I talking? Other than the promoter said, hey brother, I need a promo, right? Why do we care about what you have to say? And then something that's cool that they'll remember. That's the key to it in my mind. It's actually, it took me a long time to figure out how easy it was, which is the irony, right? It's like, mm-hmm. I had to travel for wrestling for 12 years, hundreds of thousands of miles, to finally realize where home was, and it was back where I started. You know what I mean? It's like, you have to take that journey to get there. My probably most popular promo, I don't even say a word in. I was going against PB Smooth, and I was in New York to see some Broadway shows. So I just leaned on Schubert Alley right there. Nice background, New York City happening behind me. And I just ate a jar of peanut butter and looked around.
That was in the Magnum's Opus, wasn't
yeah.
it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, I put the whole thing in there too, because it's way too long, but it was like, that's kind of the theme of the character, which is like, you got to sit here for 90 seconds. Sorry. But don't be afraid to get creative. Like, people send me promos all the time especially after I have classes with them, and they'll be like, what do you think? And I'm always very positive. And I just feel like the more you try to be different, the more you'll grow and stand out. I mean, it sounds simple, because it takes a lot of toil and effort to get to the point where you realize how simple it is.
Right. If I could ask you another quick one, Jim's daughter, I mentioned to you before we started, is training with Cody Hawk, and she's coming along good as a wrestler, but she's having issues with camera shyness. Do you have any tips you might be able to give about her being more comfortable in front of the camera?
Repetition. You have to do it a million times. Your eyes give everything away, right? I mean, the eyes are the window to the soul for a reason. And if you ever watch a movie, you'll realize that the best actors are the ones who give you their eyes, right? And you can see what they're doing, and they're not pulling faces on camera, but it's all right here in their eyes. So that's why Bret Hart wore sunglasses for so long, because when he was doing those promos in the 80s, he's, oh God, what am I going to say? And I'm so nervous. Mm-hmm. So they put the shades on, and then he just looked cool sitting there, you know, like, oh, you know, me and Anvil, you know, we're going to go up there, you know, my brother Owen, you know, and like, so it's like, he seemed cool. So whatever she could do to make her, if it's something like that to start out with, just to get comfortable. But you just have to realize that the camera, you have to resign yourself to the fact the camera is an X-ray and it's going to see right into your brain. I mean, and you just have to be okay with that. You have to get used to being exposed. And there's almost a certain comfort in that. Once you accept that, like, good or bad, we don't have a net and we're going, it's almost like you can relax because it's like, I don't know, pedal to the metal, here we go. So I would say don't pretend the camera's not there. Don't do all that. Just do it enough times to where it doesn't seem like a big deal. I mean, I remember driving to New Jersey for Capital Wrestling, I think it was, and I was late because there was like a traffic jam and all this, and then the parking was messed up, and I had to go run back out and move my car. We're going live, and we're match one. We weren't even match one. We were match zero, which I didn't understand. Like, I don't know how. They're like, you're on zero. And I was like, so just like go home? Or like, what does that mean? Okay, we're zero. And they're like, but we need a promo and we're going live, you know, with it on the feed. And I'm like, oh God. So I run up and they're like, you have 90 seconds. And I was like, I have 90 seconds? Like, you just told me I have a promo and you want me to go a minute and a half? So I was just like, right into the camera, just like, who cares? I'm going for it. It's Roddy Piper. Whether it makes sense or it doesn't make sense, you got to give me an A for effort because God, I'm here and I'm going to do this and I got hair coming out my nose and all young and like and all this stuff. And it's just like, as long as the energy's there and you're going for it, I think it'll start to work. So just, there's nothing to be afraid of. I mean, acting is failing a million times. I mean, that's just what it is. And you can't be afraid because as soon as you're afraid to look like an idiot, you'll look like an idiot. So just be like, I'm going for it. Who cares? F you.
Oh, I got that down to a science.
Well, okay. So again, Chris, thank you so much. I'm going to make sure my daughter listens and watches this episode so that she can take some kernels of knowledge from you.
Well, you know, she just needs to go for it. And you can see why these things are like 2 hours long because I just can't shut up. But one thing to remember is thousands and thousands of people have done this already and done it really well. There's no reason why she can't be one of those people. And when I used to get nervous, and I think a little differently now because I've had some mentors in my real life, theater mentors, wrestling mentors, my grandfathers and a couple of my grandmothers. I think about them a lot before I perform. But before they were gone, I used to think about like all the people who wrestled before me who are gone. And like that energy is lingering somewhere. And it's just like, pull from that and be like, they all did it. And it's like, you can take that energy and realize that they didn't have anything you didn't have other than a chance and some confidence. So just that's all the ingredients you need.
Okay. I'm working with her and trying to get her used to the camera. So she'll get there. And I have all the confidence in the world. I've watched her training and the technique's there.
Well, Cody Hawk's amazing. I mean, if someone asked me the top three people she could be training with, I mean, he'd be in that list. The other thing is wrestling is a lot like stand-up. Watch any stand-up comedian their first year, 2-3 years, and they just sound like their favorite comedian. You know, have her, who does she like? What promos does she like? Is there any wrestler that she likes? Kind of take that vibe for a while till you get up on your feet and then make it your own after time. My wife she had that click for me and she's like, why do you like Roddy Piper? Why do you like Ric Flair? Why do you like Rick Rude? And I took that essence, combined it all together, put it through my filter. And then it was like, boom, got it.
Perfect. I know she's got a couple of favorites and I'm going to drill that into her head and see what comes out.
Perfect.
So again, this has been, I mean, yay. Thank you so much. What else can I say? This has been an amazing episode. And Chris has just been a wealth of knowledge. And, you know, everything that came out was, I think it's going to be one of our most entertaining episodes. So thanks again.
Oh, yeah. Definitely show Chris some love. Check out Marking Out as documentary. Check out Magnum's Opus. If you've ever wondered and thought to yourself, would it ever be possible for somebody to walk around four sides of a wrestling ring and paintbrush the fans, knock their hats off, and nobody do a damn thing about it? If you've ever wondered if that's possible, trust me, it is possible. Watch Magnum's Opus and he'll prove it to you.
I'm gonna watch it.
just act like you're supposed to be there and that's enough confidence and most people just let you do it. I don't know.
Oh, for the Wrestle Horror Podcast, I'm Meat Hook Jim, along with Donnie Hoover, John Orlando, and our special guest, Magnum CK. Catch you on the next episode.
Thanks for listening. Make sure you follow us on all of our social media outlets. Facebook.com/WrestleHorror. Instagram @WrestleHorror. Twitter @WrestleHorror. On our YouTube channel, The Wrestle Horror Channel. Also, you can find us at www.WrestleHorror.com.